Apple computers have been around and for a long time, and they've been on a roll. Macintosh and Apple have been on a roll for some time now as well. It wasn't that long ago when a three share of the personal computer market was Apple's lot, but that's up to 5% now. And 2 weeks ago, Apple released the iPhone. I tell you what, more hype and hysteria over that iPhone than probably almost any phone ever. And it's getting great reviews, not only for the phone, but for its products and services. Joe Rhodes is a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. He was with us once, one other time. We were pleased to have him back. He's been supporting Macs professionally since 1999 and unprofessionally for several years before that. So we're really happy to have him back to talk about Macintosh computers and accessories. Certainly, if you have a question or a comment about that topic area, Macintosh computers and accessories, we hope you'll join in. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Anywhere else, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Joe Rhodes, welcome back.
Great to be here.
You know, I've had Macintosh computers for a long time myself, and I was trying to remember if I ever had any problems with them. I don't recall ever having problem.
They run pretty darn well, but, you know, actually, since the last time we visited, I've had the unfortunate consequence. I've had to tell a couple customers, I'm sorry, but your hard drive died, and everything on it went with it. And that is far and away the worst thing about my job when I have to deliver that news. I hate it.
Yeah.
But as it turns out, it's not hard to plan for that. Backing up your computers, a lot of people kind of groan, and it feels like buying car insurance. It just feels like a waste and tedium until the first time you need it. and then, boy, are you glad you have it.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, it's really not hard. It's fairly inexpensive now. We've got external hard drives, which are fast and they're big and they're not too expensive. You can usually get a 200 gig drive for under $100 if you shop around, and you just plug it into your Mac and with a couple of steps you can start backing up your data. And it's one of the things I'm really trying to coach people on. It's a practice. It's something you kind of need to be in the habit of, because they're machines. They have moving parts. They're made by human beings, and they do eventually fail.
Yeah.
And, you know, Macs are so good at storing things like pictures and movies and music and all this stuff that we used to keep in shoeboxes. You know, my mom's got a closet full of shoeboxes of photos, but now she's got a digital camera and she keeps this all on her Mac. And if something happened to her Mac, you know, that'd be a crying shame if you couldn't show your children's fiancés their embarrassing baby pictures from 20 years ago.
All right. So back it up. Back it up. Boyd in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Boyd.
Hi, Boyd.
Good morning, Larry. Hello, and hello to your guest. I am so glad you're having him on today. I'm in the process of buying my first Mac, but I'm waiting until November to buy it. I want to get a MacBook Pro laptop for graphic design work.
Oh, lovely machines.
Yes, I'm very excited about it. And my two questions is this. With laptops, you can upgrade them, correct?
You can upgrade parts of them, but it's not as simple as opening up a Mac tower and putting new components in.
Okay. How would you compare that with, like, a desktop?
Well, as far as upgradability?
Yes.
Well, it depends. And Apple's laptops, or actually Apple's desktops, especially like the iMac and the Mac Mini, they really kind of fall more into the category of their notebooks, in that they've made these beautiful compact designs that aren't really intended to be broken open and meddling around inside. So when we're talking about the difference between a desktop and a laptop, if you're talking about the tower, that's definitely made to be broken open and add stuff into it.
Okay.
But with your laptop, the stuff that you can easily upgrade is the memory.
Okay.
And then the stuff that requires a little bit more surgery, you can in the future put in a bigger hard drive. I've got one of the first generation MacBook Pros, and I absolutely love it. But, you know, ever since I started downloading TV shows over iTunes, my hard drive is getting kind of small. So in the next month or two, I'm probably going to do some surgery and pull my old hard drive out and put in a bigger one, because I want to have more episodes of Stargate on there. so with the laptops, that's really your... that's really how much you get to upgrade. You don't get to upgrade the video card. You don't get to upgrade the processor. Those things are all built into it.
Okay.
But the nice thing about Apple products is they have a lot of ports and a lot of everything you need built into the machine. I mean, they already have FireWire, USB, wireless network, built-in network. You can already support, you know, if, with the MacBook Pros, you can support Apple's biggest monitor that they make. So, you know, over the course of, say, you have this laptop for 5-7 years, I don't know how much stuff you're going to need to add to it. I mean, faster processor would be nice in a couple years, but that you can't.
Okay. And then just one final question.
Yeah.
When paying for this, the reason why I'm waiting until November is pretty much saving up. There is no way you can ever pay with an installment plan, can you? I don't think so, but...
Well, with computers in general, it's incredibly unwise because next month the computer is worth half of what you paid for it, and it just drops from there. So
okay.
Putting these things on an installment plan is almost always a bad idea because they devaluate so fast.
Okay.
So your best bet is to, you know, buy the thing outright, make sure you get a machine that's going to do everything you need it to do, and, you know, kind of anticipate what you need to do, you know, a year down the road and make sure it's going to handle that, and you're pretty much set.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Boyd. Thanks for calling. Ted in Farmington, let's go to you next. Hi, Ted. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I've got a question about, I'm fairly computer illiterate.
Okay.
No problem.
But we have a Macintosh G4.
All right.
That was given to us. And we can really only get dial-up out where we live. We could get satellite, but it just seems to be too expensive.
Yeah, that satellite is expensive, unfortunately.
Yep. So, but we only have the 9.0 operating system.
Okay.
And the only thing I'd really like to do with this is occasionally get on the internet. And
okay.
I'm okay with the speed of dial-up. It's not fun, but...
right.
If you're really in a pinch, it works. My wife just gave me an iPod, and I'd like to be able to put music on, you know, like put my CDs on the computer and then transfer them to the iPod.
Sure.
The G4 won't, that operating system doesn't seem to work with the new other device.
Right. Is this G4 one of the towers, or is it the little cube-shaped one? Does it have like kind of two big handles on the top and you can pick it up and it's got a door that swings open and
no, it's just the screen and the keyboard, and then down below the desk we have the hole where you would put in a disc and
yeah.
Right, and that part you put the disc in, is that like a big rectangular box?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. With pretty much all of the current iPods, if that's really what you're driving after, you're going to need to use Mac OS X.
Yep.
Now, the good news is the G4s will run Mac OS X.
Okay.
It won't be as quick as Mac OS 9 because Apple has added a lot of stuff to it, and that all takes horsepower to run, but it will certainly run it and serviceably so. Now, you're going to get another benefit if you go to Mac OS 10, and that is you're going to get a modern web browser, which you probably don't have right now. I know you don't have right now.
Yeah, and that is an issue, actually, for us. Sometimes we get to a website, and then
it just
we
looks
can't
weird.
Get on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you will definitely gain those things by moving to Mac OS 10. The other thing I would look at, because the G4s, they're kind of old, and the hard drives that they shipped with were kind of small, and music takes up a lot of space.
Okay.
So I would take a peek and see how big that hard drive is. And what you might consider doing is, go and buy a second hard drive. You can buy just a bare hard drive. You can buy a 250-gigabyte hard drive for like $60, $70. And you can put that in there and put Mac OS X on that and just leave your old drive as it is. That way, if you realize, oh, there was something I really needed on that old drive, you can get to it. You've got a big drive, you've got Mac OS X, you can plug your iPod in. The other thing you're going to need to run your iPod nicely on this machine, all of the iPods use USB 2.0, and
okay.
your Mac has the older USB 1.0, and it's about 10 times slower.
Uh-huh.
But the nice part is you can go out to any local store and buy a PCI card that will fit in that tower, and just get yourself a USB 2.0 card and plug it in and plug your iPod into that, and you'll be on your way.
Okay, one last question.
Yeah.
Any idea how much all these three things would cost for me to have somebody come in and, do this for me?
Well, I don't know if you're going to have someone come in and do it, but you could probably take the computer into a repair
sure.
shop.
And you just have to take the tower.
Yeah, you just have to take the tower. You don't have to take the keyboard and the monitor and all that stuff.
Okay.
Hard to say. You know, my rough guesstimate would be these things would take about maybe 2 hours to do these kind of repairs, so it depends on what their hourly charge are. I mean, putting the PCI card and the hard drive is easy. From a labor standpoint, they just snap right in. And installing Mac OS X is not very hard. And then you just, you know, the bigger cost is going to be the parts. You know, the hard drive is, say, $50 to $70. Mac OS X is $130. And that PCI card, off the top of my head, I'd guess it's about $20-ish.
So I might be able to get away with this whole thing for $400.
Yeah, conceivably.
Sure.
I just didn't want to, you know, if it was going to cost so much that it would be better off buying a new computer.
Well, that was actually my next thought is, you know, a Mac Mini is $600.
A Mac Mini is $600.
You know, and so when you put it in that standpoint, you're upgrading an old machine.
Right.
And for $200, you can get a much faster, newer machine. You know, which one is going to make sense for you? And, you know, if that $200 is a big stretch, then definitely stick with the one you've got. And, you know, if it's not, you might be better off in the long run. It depends on how much you're doing with this machine and how valuable it really is to you. So.
Yeah, it's more of a play toy and a little bit of a knowledge, you know, a way to access knowledge on the internet.
Sure.
Okay, well, I guess I have some things to think about.
All right, good luck.
Yes, you do. Thanks, Dad. Thanks for calling. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, talking with Joe Rhodes about Macintosh computers and accessories today. Jerry in Waterford, it's your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate it. I've got three quick questions, if I can. I got a G5 pre-Intel, and it's, you know, I hear various things as far as the shuffle is concerned on I'm sorry, I misspoke. In regards to security software for Macintosh, is the security software necessary, or can you buy it? And I do have Mac Office, and I keep getting upgrades on Mac Office, saying, you know, upgrade this because of security.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my first question.
Okay. Now, by security, I'm wondering. There's two different ways about security. One of them is Apple and Microsoft, as you notice, they push out updates. They find a bug with Mac OS X, and they say, okay, here's a fix that will close that hole.
Okay.
And those are always good things to do.
Okay.
If you're using Mac OS 10.4, and I'm guessing if you have a G5, you probably are.
Yeah.
The most current version is 10.4.10.
Okay.
So that last number, that .10, that's the kind of the patch level, if you will. And yes, very good things to do those. Those are free. Microsoft Office, I think the most recent patch level is 11.3.6, if I'm not mistaken. They just released one like last week. And those are free, and definitely apply those when they come up.
And we'll take some more of Jerry's questions in just a couple of minutes. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest Joe Rhodes, talking Macintosh computers here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking Macintosh computers and accessories now with Joe Rhodes, self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Happy to have you listening in. Joe, I know you have a website, and let's give that website now, and what have you got on it?
Sure. My website is www.joerhodes.com. It's R-H-O-D-E-S.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a link right at the top that says WPR. And if you click on that, you will find a number of posts. It's a blog I've got going of different things that people have asked me and ways you can handle it. For example, I have three different posts on how you can back up your computer and different ways of doing it. And I actually have, you know, they say a picture is worth 1,000 words. So I put pictures up there of what you should be looking at when you're going through these steps.
Cool.
And then, you know, things that we cover on the air, a lot of times I'm talking about things and they might be just a little bit too complicated to handle verbally only. So I try to reinforce those things. Like when I get back to my office, I'm going to talk about them on my website and put screenshots so that if you heard about it on the air and you want to follow along at home, you know, you can kind of get some reinforcement from that and kind of get a refresher from that too. So,
and that's joerhodes.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Jerry in Waterford has some questions for you. Jerry, you with us there?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. I apologize. My phone's on speaker, and I'm afraid if I take it off, I'm going to lose you. So I hope my voice isn't too bad here.
Oh, you're fine.
in regards to the security, I was wondering about antivirus. You know, on the PC, it's a must.
It's mandatory, yes.
Yeah, and on Macintosh, I don't have the antivirus on there. I don't even know if anybody even makes it for it. But I've heard that there are viruses out there for the Mac, so I just wondered about that.
Yeah, well, you know, here's the situation. With a PC, antivirus is absolutely mandatory. It is a way of life. And the Mac is not inherently any more secure than a PC. I mean, there's no technological reason why the Mac is going to necessarily never have a virus. There are some moderate reasons for that, but nothing that's, you know, it's not impervious. However, at the moment, there aren't any Mac viruses that are out there circulating. There's been a couple of proof of concepts which basically said, hey, you know, we can do it, but there's not a whole lot of them out there. The problem with this is a lot of Mac users, we tend to get complacent and we think, oh, well, we're impervious to this sort of thing. And Apple's advertising actually kind of plays into this, too. Here's my suggestion. Unfortunately, the commercial antivirus packages for the Mac are awful. They're really bad. They slow down the machine. For the Intel Macs, they're not even native for the Intel Macs yet, so they're really slow. And they just do lots of weird things. So I take a little bit more of a measured approach to this. There is a free and open source package called ClamXAV. And it is a antivirus software that is written for basically servers, and then a guy ported it to run on Mac OS X. And what you can do is you can install this and you can download the updates for free, and it's reasonably good. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't insert itself into your operating system at a really tight level. So it doesn't watch everything you do. Instead, it's kind of reactionary. You ask it to scan certain things on your computer. So the way I have this set up on my laptop is I have this installed and I have it set to update, you know, every day at noon. And I have it set that it watches a folder. And if any file shows up in this folder, then I want it to scan that file. And what I do is I have it scan my desktop, because when I'm on the internet and I'm downloading files, they download to my desktop. So for me, that seems like the most reasonable place where if I'm going to catch a virus, it's going to be something I've downloaded. So I have it set to scan everything that shows up in this folder, namely my desktop, that I download. And so that's, for me, that's a, I think, a pretty decent middle ground, because it's not doing much when I don't need it to do it. So yeah, the rest of my computer doesn't slow down. But it is scanning the stuff that I'm doing that's high risk. So I'm, you know, reasonably confident about that. And I'll put a link on my website to that software package so you can find it. You know, and the best part is it's free.
Yeah.
So you're not losing anything by it, and it's fairly non-intrusive, and it's updated very frequently. So I'm kind of a fan of that stuff. It's called ClamXAV if you Google for it.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. I like the idea that it's free.
Most of us do.
I have a problem on the mail. Again, I have Mac Office, so I could go to the Microsoft version of Mail, but mm-hmm. I'm using the Mac, and sometimes when it goes into a PC, it ends up with these extraneous question marks throughout the text.
That sometimes has to do with whatever kind of font you're using, and your best bet when you're sending email, and this is just kind of a network etiquette thing, if you can send your message in what's called plain text, and mail will let you send messages in two forms, in rich text, which will have lots of formatting and markup and things like that, so you can make your text very pretty, but the problem is sometimes PCs don't know how to handle that. And when you're writing a new message, if you go under the message menu, and I'm looking for this right now. So it's under the format, I'm sorry. There is an option there that you can either make it rich text or make it plain text.
Okay.
And, you know, most people they'll like you more if you send it as plain text. You'll be more popular and you'll look better and all these wonderful things. Just because, you know, let's say you're reading this on a telephone, as a lot of people are starting to do now. If it's sent as plain text, it's just the letters. And so you kind of avoid those funny question marks. Those question marks basically is a PC doesn't know how to interpret your markup.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling, Jerry. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Kevin in New Berlin, your turn now. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an Apple iPod that was given to me as a gift about a year and a half ago.
Okay. You have nice friends.
The battery sort of died on it. It just, you know, it doesn't work anymore. It won't charge, won't do anything. And I'm just curious if it's worthwhile to take it in and have it repaired, or should I just, like, save that money and buy a different clone? Because my understanding is that they've had issues with the batteries in iPods, and you really can't, like, replace the batteries or anything like that. You just kind of have to buy a new one or like I said, pay Apple. Apple can't even repair it is what I understand.
Oh, yeah, they can. What kind of iPod is it?
It's the 20 gig.
Okay, so it's the bigger ones. Yeah, actually, I had one of those. You actually can open up iPods, and you can replace the battery. You have to be, you know, a little handy with a tool, because Apple's got that case sealed up really tight. They like very nice, tight seams. They don't want to have gaps. If you go to a website, I believe it's called iPod Lounge, okay, or if you Google for iPod battery replacement, and I know that these exist because I did this myself, and you can buy a battery replacement kit, and boy, I'm going from memory here, and this has been a while ago, but I want to say the battery kit was like $30 or $40. It was fairly reasonable. You can actually crack this thing open, and they will give you a tool that you can use to crack it open, and it seems a little harsh because you really have to kind of pry.
Okay.
But you can pry the silver case off the back.
Okay.
And you can unsnap the battery, and you can put in a new battery, and then you can mail the old battery to them for recycling so it doesn't end up in the landfill. And you basically get your iPod back to full capacity. So if your current iPod has enough space and you're happy with the way it's going and you like it, there is no reason to throw it out or go get a new one. Just, you know, Google around and you will find a battery replacement kit. And I think iPod Lounge, I don't know if they sell them, but they deal with all things iPod, and they can probably point you to where you can get these things.
Yeah, that's terrific, because the only other option was to, you know, get something else. And you feel bad when you take, you know, a year getting all your music just how you want it.
Go get that battery pack kit, Kevin.
You got it. Thank you very much. Right. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. All right, Nick in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hey.
Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
I'm in my last year of film school at UWM, and I've got an iBook G4.
Okay.
Still works great. I do a lot of video editing on it and sound and things like that, and it doesn't quite have all the capabilities that I need for doing the audio importing and video and things like that.
Mm.
And 'cause to do it, I have to go through this really hard process of loading it onto all this whatever. And I was actually considering using financial aid money to purchase a newer computer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in my last year. I figured it might be a wise idea to get a new computer under financial aid to maybe, I don't know. And I'm kind of stuck. I'm looking at the MacBook versus the MacBook Pro.
Sure.
And I know that the MacBook Pro has got, you know, mic inputs, and it's got all that stuff on there. It's got a fast processor. It's got, you know, a lot of stuff that I need, but it's really expensive.
Yeah.
And, you know, even with the student discount, I mean, it's still, you know, $2,300. But the normal MacBook, you know, it's, you know, grand last is actually, you know, $1,200, but it doesn't have, you know, the mic inputs and things that I need. I'm really stuck. And I don't know if I should just, you know, start saving or spend financial aid money on it, or just deal with what I got. I mean, yeah, I'm afraid, because I don't want to, you know, get in too far in debt because of school.
Hey, you know, as someone who is paying off his college loans right now, I would probably advocate against using financial aid money for that, because it does come back to haunt you.
Right.
Here's the thing. Can you use a USB audio in? Is there ways you can work around some of the things that the MacBook won't do with, say, an external connector? You use, you know, USB audio in or a USB audio connectors, things like that?
Yeah, sure.
Because here's the big thing that a MacBook has, or that a MacBook Pro has over the MacBook. It has, you know, obviously a much nicer screen, and it has the capability of supporting the big Apple 30-inch display. And, you know, if you're making your living doing video editing, that's a big feature.
Right.
But if you're not, you know, a 20-inch display might be just fine, or a 23-inch display. Otherwise, the machines are reasonably close. And if you've gotten comfortable working on an iBook G4, and I know what those are like, and doing any kind of video rendering or compression on those things is kind of a, you know, that's a task in patience. Good for you.
Right. Yeah.
You know, even the MacBook is going to be orders of magnitude faster than what you have now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the better question that you might have to think about is, once I'm done with school, what am I going to be doing? And if I'm going to be doing film editing at a full time, am I going to be using my own machine, or am I going to be using my employer's? You know, that might kind of sway your decision one way or the other. Because if you are going to be doing this, say you're going to go out on your own, you know, then it makes sense to get the MacBook and really beef it up, because you're going to be using this for a long time. But if you're going to be working for someone and they're going to give you a Final Cut Pro rig, and you just need to get through the last year of school and maybe a couple of freelance projects, you know, the MacBook, if you can find ways to get that, you know, that audio in, sounds like kind of a killer feature for you. See if you can find a way to work around that. Because, yeah, I've got a lot of clients, business clients, using MacBooks, and they love them. They're just in love with them. The biggest issue is, you know, the hard drive's a little small, and they don't support as much memory. But, you know, compared to where you are now, I don't think, you know, you're any of these things is going to be such a big step up for you that you're going to be dancing in the street, so...
Okay.
All right. Well, I got a lot to think about. But,
yeah.
Good luck with that. And good luck with school.
Right. All right. Thanks a lot, Nick. Joe in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple of small questions. Hopefully small.
Okay.
I'm running a Mac Mini. It's the 1.42 gigahertz G4.
Okay.
Memory is 256.
Mm-hmm.
And... it seems to take an awful long time for it just to start up.
Mm.
I've had instances where I've had to get on the support line to get it started, and they're telling me to, you know, push two or three buttons at once and start it up and whatnot. And this has happened probably over the last 3 years, maybe three times.
So,
as a matter of fact, just when I was waiting on the phone, it happened. So I'm wondering if it has anything to do with what I'm storing in the computer. As far as all I'm using is the GarageBand program.
Mm.
And I'm wondering if transferring all those files over to my iTunes is just slowing it down, or
It certainly can. When you say it takes a long time to start up, how long are we talking about? Like, normally it should start up in about, you know, 45 to 60 seconds.
Uh-huh.
And you say every once in a great while it will take long?
Sometimes the screen will pop up without the Apple,
uh-huh.
And then a file will pop up with the little, you know, like the Finder face.
The flashing question mark?
Sometimes the question mark, and sometimes the face, you know, a file with a face on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And is that usually what happens when it takes a long time to start?
Yes.
Okay. With that little question mark means, or that that little smiley face, that means it's looking for an operating system that it can boot from. And it's kind of, you know, rummaging around the hard drive trying to find that.
Okay.
Now, it is possible that if your hard drive is getting really full, and GarageBand does create some really big files,
uh-huh.
It is possible that you might be getting so full that the hard drive is slowed down so far that it is having trouble finding that and starting from it. Once the machine is running, you can check it out. You can click on your hard drive,
mm-hmm.
and in the Finder, you go under the File menu and you say Get Info. And that will tell you about how big the hard drive is and how much free space you have.
Okay.
And the general rule of thumb with computers, you want to have about 10% of your disk free at any given time.
Gotcha.
And when you get below 10%, the computer starts to slow down because it's got to hunt harder to find a free spot to plunk your files down. So that's one thing you can do. The other thing is, make sure that you go into your system preferences. And you can find that under the Apple menu.
Okay.
And just make sure that you have the startup disk set to the hard drive that you actually have in the machine, because every once in a while it can get set, you know, so it's looking for a network boot or something like that, and that will slow you down by like 2 minutes while it looks to see if there's a network option available, and there's not because you're at a home network, and then it gives up, and then it boots off the hard drive.
I see.
But if you're just having this every once in a while, my hunch is that you may have maybe a chip or something inside the computer that's being a little squirrely.
Okay.
And another thing you can do when you're starting up, if you're having a lot of trouble, is when you press the power button, hold down the Option key.
Gotcha.
And wait, you will get what's called an open firmware screen, and it will show you all of the things that the computer believes that it can start from. And it takes about, you know, 60 seconds or 90 seconds for that screen to be completed. And then you can click on whichever one you want to start from. And in your case, it should just be the internal hard drive.
Right.
Unless you happen to have a DVD in there with Mac OS X on it. But
no.
Yeah, but so you can also try that, and you know, in case of emergency break glass, hold down the Option key as you're starting up, and it basically gives you the options you can start the computer with.
Excellent.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Thanks for calling. Good advice there, Judy in Milwaukee. Your turn. Hi, Judith.
Yes. Hi. Please promise not to laugh when I tell you I have OS 8.6.
I never laugh at that.
Okay. I worked on Macs when I was working at a magazine, and then continued to work on my home Mac. This was at one point my new computer, and somehow I still think of it that way. and, you know, did a lot of Quark and stuff. And then retired, and it never seemed important to upgrade until I've discovered over the last couple of years that there's less and less that I can access on the web as I try to, you know, go to different sites and so forth. So first let me understand that if I've got an iMac, I cannot upgrade, right? I can't add anything to it to get me to OS X.
Well, what kind of iMac do you have?
I don't know. I'm looking at it right now.
Does it look like a big jelly bean, or does it look like one of those desk lamps that, like those articulating desk lamps?
Well, you know, it's the desktop thing that's kind of an aqua color, and I've got the system profile open on here. What do you need to know besides the fact that it's 8.6?
How fast is the processor? Does it tell you what kind of processor and how fast it is?
Processor info, PowerPC G3.
Okay. And to tell you how fast it's going?
Machine speed, 333 megahertz.
Okay. No, that machine will not run Mac OS X.
Okay. Well,
the next model after that would, but that one will not run the most. It'll run an older version of Mac OS X. But finding that's going to be a bit tricky, and it's going to kind of put you in the same situation that you are now.
Right. So I just wanted to confirm that this is basically going to be a paperweight.
It's not a paperweight. It runs Mac OS 8.6 quite brilliantly.
Yes. Okay.
It's not going to be so good with Mac OS X, and that's really where all the modern web browsers are.
So tell me how do I decide if the Mini is what I need? I'm no longer doing any major graphic work or anything like that. I really just need something that, you know, lets me get on lots of websites and maybe do some eBay and that sort of thing.
Sure. You know, for you, pretty much any computer Apple makes is going to be plenty fast enough based on what you just told me.
Mm-hmm.
And you're, you know, hopping along with that iMac in 8.6 and you're not having, you know, you're not pulling out your hair with that. So
I'm getting to that point.
Yeah, but I mean, any computer you buy now, even the cheapest PC is going to be three times faster than what you've got.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I would base it on. The Mac Mini is a very inexpensively priced computer, but it is definitely Apple's slowest one. Now, you have an iMac, so you don't have a screen you get to use, so you'll need to buy a screen also.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your keyboard's been around for a long time, so you may or may not decide you want to get a new keyboard. And when you start adding all these things up, you start to approach the cost of the entry-level 17-inch iMac.
Okay.
And that's going to be significantly faster than the Mac Mini, and it has this beautiful screen, and it has all these other wonderful things that are kind of built into it.
What does that cost now?
I want to say those are just under $1,000. I think they're $999 or something like that. And the Mac Mini is $600.
I'd be surprised if I could find it for that. It seemed to me that when I looked, which was not real recently, here in Milwaukee, everything seemed to be well over that.
Yeah, well, Apple doesn't really make too much of a push with that one because it's kind of it started out as their education machine.
Okay.
But if you go to apple.com and look in their store, and it should be readily obvious that they have, you know, the entry-level iMac. And what I would do is compare that cost with the cost of getting yourself a Mac Mini and a screen and potentially a keyboard and mouse and just say, you know, okay, so here's the difference in the two costs and, you know, which one is going to stack up best for you. You know, the other thing is if you want to continue using Quark, keep in mind that I'm assuming you probably have Quark 3 or Quark 4.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to need to run under Classic, and none of the new Macs will run Classic.
That's not a big concern to me.
Okay, so just so you know, Classic will not, the version of Quark that you have will not run on these machines unless you went out and bought Quark 6 or newer.
That would be all right. Just one briefly then, does it make sense to look for a used one? Because I know there are a lot of people out there who can't trade their stuff in fast enough to get the latest, and I'd be perfectly happy to, you know, just buy a really good used. Am I looking for trouble by doing that?
Well, I don't know if you're looking for trouble, but this has always surprised me. Used Macs hold their value in a way that just baffles me. I look on eBay and I see what people are getting for used PowerBooks and used Mac Pros, and I'm just like, how can you charge that when you can buy a brand new iMac for almost the same price? So it doesn't hurt to look around, but I think you're going to find that the percentage between a used one and a new one just isn't worth it. Not always, but sometimes.
Thanks for calling.
Really helpful.
Yeah, thanks, Judah. Thank you very much. And Joe, again, what's the website? What's your website?
Oh, yeah, it's Joe Rhodes, because I'm not vain. JoeRhodes.com, spelled RHODES.com. And you'll find a link right across the top that says WPR. And if you click on that, you will get to my blog where I'll be talking about all the things we talked about today. And I've cleaned up on some things that we talked about last time.
Joe, always a pleasure. You'll come back, I assume?
I certainly hope so.
Thanks, Joe. Joe Rhodes, self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. Go to his website, joerhodes.com, and you'll find out a whole lot more. Thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Bankruptcy tomorrow on the program is what we'll be talking about. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network.